What's happening in the canine industry? For all the latest news, views, and expert opinions, stay right here for the Canine Paradigm. You'll hear from industry leaders, experts, doyens of the industry, learned colleagues, movers and shakers, and the odd randy guest. Get the latest insights and expert advice from both here and abroad from the people in the know. Now, here are your hosts, Glenn Cook and Pat Stewart. And I'm Lofty Fulton, and I'm out of here.
It's been so long since we've put a new...
We're shit house at it. We're so bad at it.
It's, our poor sponsors.
We're so bad at it, and we want to get better going forward.
Yes.
But here's a quick ad, and then we're going to be better at this.
Okay.
We're going to be better.
Yeah.
I promise we're going to be better.
Yeah, except for the bullfed.
Yeah, fucking Einzelwiener.
Tell us about Einzelwiener.
He's been in it from the start. If you want a tug, a ball, a slip leash.
A slip lead.
You know, really, no joke, is slip leads are the best slip leads.
They are great slip leads.
They are the best.
But they're handmade. They're hand loved.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's times where I look at material when we're actually buying things for our businesses and some of them are just shit house.
Yeah.
Like they're so mass produced. Jason takes his time. He puts them together properly.
Like if you're listening, chances are you're in the industry, you're in the business, you need a lot of leashes, you sell them to clients, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Deck out your staff. The best thing about the Einzelwiener leashes is that he custom makes them.
He does.
You can get whatever you want, whatever color, whatever length.
Too. Like he's approachable.
Want a handle on it, no handle on it, whatever. I had him make that handler pack for me because I got sick of people turning out with shit leashes. Now everyone I train with uses all these perfect leashes.
Yep.
So get some stuff from the Einzelwiener. He's been supporting us from the start. We love him. We hate him sometimes.
Make sure you're telling me he's a bullfed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Canineceuticals.
Going great. Thank you, people in the United States who prioritize your dog's health through supplementation.
I am a walking testimonial for Canineceuticals because if you go back, you hear 18 months ago, I was like, yeah, pretty sure my dog's going to die any minute because he was so unwell and got him on the sups and he's actually in the best shape he's been in ages.
Narelle's always maintained if it never worked, she'd burn it to the ground. She's just got too much pride and too much neuroticism not to put something to market that she didn't believe in. And the wonderful thing about it is it's working well. The testimonials have been amazing and very heartfelt. Like she gets people who are so agitated and depressed and distressed about the health and the well-being of their dogs. Narelle makes no outrageous claims. Mm-hmm. She's never said that it's the one thing that does everything for dogs. She just says it's going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
By law, she's not allowed to make those claims, but she wouldn't want to anyway. But what she does tell people is it's definitely going to do better for your dog.
Yeah.
We watch our own dogs. Opie, who's got more things than you could poke a stick wrong with him, he probably wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't through Narelle's treatment, through good supplementation, changing diets, all those sort of things. I could talk about it forever. I don't want to make this sound like a buyer sales pitch. I'm a fan of it because I know if it works. If it didn't, I wouldn't.
Well, it's an ad.
Well, it's an ad.
But I wouldn't disgrace myself by talking about something that didn't work. I'd be the same with her. I'd just say burn it to the ground. I don't want to know about it.
Yeah.
And if you're a first-time customer in Australia or the US, Narelle's offering a 10% discount off the entire range of Canineceuticals products by typing in the discount code TCP10 at checkout.
Let's work through our sponsor list.
Yes.
These are the people that sponsor us and we love them for it and we're plugging their business.
Yes.
First on our list here is Daniel, who we don't know how to say is the Tropiano? Tropino.
I thought we just called him Troppy Daniel. Troppy Daniel.
Dog Club, South Australia.
Yep.
Awesome training facility.
Representing South Australia, it is great to see that a state that's usually sleepy and not considered.
Just hosting some cool events there.
Yeah. Yeah, good on you, Daniel. Well done.
George Kittredge.
Rowdy Hound.
Yeah. It's fucking cool. It's a box for your dog that goes on your motorbike.
The only one that I know of.
Yeah. It's the coolest product.
Not in Australia yet. So hopefully one day we can talk to Horny George about getting some Rowdy Hound dog boxes in here. He does training videos. He shows people how to train their dogs to get into the Rowdy Hound. He's a dog trainer himself. He's in the biz.
Yep. Barbara DeGroot.
From the Heart Dog Training.
That's her.
Our sugar mama.
Yeah.
She's so good.
I love
her. She asks nothing in return. She's as placid with love and money. She's very encouraging all the time. Thank you, Barbara. She's a Roddy lady. So what would you expect?
Yep. Tailored Canines.
We don't know much about Tailored Canines. They just turned up one day and said, hey, we just want to throw some money at you. But they offer a complete range of canine training services.
Yep. Tailored Canines. Where are they? They're in Canada, right?
They're in Canada.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of Canadians, we've got a couple of Americans, we've got a couple of Aussies. Good eclectic mix. We haven't got anyone from Europe. Fucking hell. Up your game.
But we can't take any more sponsors. So We're bad enough at Birdie O'Shea. Oh, yeah. So we are plugging as well. Birdie was on for us last week and then told us about her webinar thing that she's got going on for people in the
Magic of Dogs.
Magic of Dogs. So head to birdieoshetty.com, I think is her website, and you can check that out there. All the sponsors, trust us, we're getting better at the ads. I promise you, next, we're going to be in touch with you and we're going to get better at it. We're going to take it more seriously. We're just shit at it because we've got other stuff and this is just an extra that we like to do. We thank you very much
for
your
support.
But we
both spanked each other. Pat spanked me and then I spanked him.
We need to get better at this.
Yeah, we do.
We were going to leave it another week of the existing ad and thought, no, we can't possibly. We're actually together for the first time. Yep. That's what's been holding us back is that
we haven't been together.
Yeah. I missed you.
I missed you too.
All right, that's it. Here's the show.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Canine Paradigm. I'm your host, Pat Stewart. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Glenn Cook.
We haven't been together again for a couple of sessions now.
I know. We're back. We're doing it.
We are.
We're here. We did it.
We did it. That's your new thing. We did it.
We did it.
I've seen you do that a bunch of times where you're taking a photo and right at the end, I hear you say, we did it.
Yeah. So either Axel got it from me or I've got it from him. I don't know, but he says it all the time. And so I always say it in like a kid's excitedness because he was like, woohoo, we did it. So he must have got it from me or vice versa, whatever.
Every time I hear you say that, it reminds me of the Mark Zuckerberg film that they did with Jesse Weinberg.
The Social Network.
The Social Network.
Yeah.
When they're in that house together and his friends are talking to him while they're shimmying off the chimney into the pool.
Yeah.
He goes, did you see? And he goes, nope. And they go, we did it. He goes, you did. I don't know why, I get a mental image of that.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Mate, at the weekend, we were at PSA trial here. You were the judge. I actually didn't have an official role beyond sort of helping it keep going, but I was gone all weekend, right? So what happened was I was getting up at 4:30 in the morning and then didn't get home until like 8 o'clock at night. And on the Sunday night when I got home, you know, you come home like all sort of woo, right? Like I've done a thing and I'm all excited. Axel's in bed, but I'm talking to Rip. We're all in his room, sort of putting him to bed. Remy's in there as well. When we put the kids to bed, usually it's like a whole family affair, right? Mm. So Axel goes to bed first and then me, Jane, both dogs all kind of go in and read the story in Rip's room and whatever. And Remy's laying on the floor and I look at him and I say, we got some training to do, buddy, because like the next trial's ours, right? Like, and it's the first time since 2019 that he's going to be able to show in PSA.
Mm.
And even though I've called him retired twice and I'm not necessarily emotionally attached to the idea of trialing because he's injured all the time. And if that week he's okay, then I'm going to trial him.
So right? I'm going to start calling you John Farnham from now on.
Yeah, the comeback tour.
The comeback tour. Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Farnham never stopped.
Yeah. But I look at Remy in front of Rip and I'm like, mate, we got some training to do. And Rip was incredulous. He looked at me like I was straight bullshitting. And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, we got to train because we're going to do this test. We're going to do this trial. I want to close out my level two. I only got the opportunity to get one leg of it in 2019. We haven't had a judge out here that can judge a level two since then.
True.
It's, you know, it's like over 4 years later, I want to try and, you know, it's 5 years later it will be. I want to try and just get that done. And he was looking at me. He's like proper, genuine confusion on his face. And he's like, you're a dog trainer. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, and Remy's like my age, right? Because they're almost the same age. He's like, how is he not trained? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, this kid calls me out. He goes, you've had like 7 years, 8 years to train him. Like, how is he not trained? And I realized in that moment, he kind of doesn't really understand what I do in dogs. He doesn't give a shit. He's not that into it.
He doesn't understand an extinction cycle.
No, and he doesn't understand the level of training that I have on that dog and the level of training that's required to get a level two in PSA. He has no sort of picture around that.
Does he still do jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
He still does?
Yeah.
On a regular basis?
Yeah, 2 days a week, yeah.
So is there anything else that he used to do that he hasn't done for a while?
Yeah.
Well, relate it to him like that. Say, if you try and take up this again after all of this time having it off,
yeah,
tell me how your experience feels.
But the thing is, he sees me take the dogs out every day, right? And he sees me do training with the dogs every day.
Yeah.
And so his question was, how come he's not fully trained? Like, how is it?
It's that, a good question.
Yeah. How is it that you as a professional trainer, and he, you know, acknowledges that I'm a trainer that also trains other trainers. So I'm a person that really should have know what I'm doing. And I was trying to conceptualize to him, like, how do I explain that the dog, first of all, has to have the muscle conditioning to be able to do the thing? Like, he needs to be physically fit enough to be able to get through the trial.
Yep.
I need to make sure that his body is in tone enough to be able to even hold the positions that I'm going to ask him to hold for those periods of time, you know, like to heal for that period of time, to bite that much, you know, like do all those sorts of things. I'm going to have to keep working physical conditioning. But then also sort of showing him the trial pitches and letting him get things wrong so that I can tell him, hey, that's not right. Then he said, so I sort of start explaining that a little bit to him about like what I've got to do with the dog. And he goes, but how come you don't do that with Valerie? And I was like, well, she doesn't do this stuff. She doesn't do that. So then he hits me. He's like, so she's fully trained. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. And then it occurred to me that I can't, and I had this conversation with someone the other day. I can't even remember the last time I actually told Val to do anything. Like the only thing that I ever, like that is a command that I've actually given to her is get out from under my feet. That's all I seem to say to her.
Yeah.
Get out from under my feet. You know, I spend a lot of time with her. I play with her a lot. We throw the ball. We play tug. I let her search for stuff. We do a lot of things together. She snuggles with me on the couch, all the things that normal people do with their dog. But she's a dog that I spent a lot of time training, spent a year. We had the whole Val video series thing that was spent 12 months really putting a lot of work into training that dog. Then initially I spent a couple of more years sort of training her to do various stuff. And then we did some detection stuff with her. I decided there was one point where I thought I was going to do IGP with her just for the laugh. So I put really crazy flashy healing on her for a little while.
Yep.
But because she's just a pet and I don't have a purpose, like her purpose is to just be awesome and live a great life and do that in the presence of me, right? Yep. That's her purpose.
Yep.
And so she's a fully trained dog. She comes when I need her to come back. She does that begrudgingly sometimes. Like, and sometimes the odd second command has to happen. Like that's reality of the, depending on the nature of the situation that we're in.
Mm.
She downs when I needed a down. That's something that I really have rigidly maintained, but I imprinted very heavily as well. It's one of the things that I think is super important for a dog that at distance, they should be able to, you should be able to just stop them dead in their tracks to keep them safe. Right. And she just kind of lives the life in parallel and effortlessly next to me. So it occurred to me to think about what is a trained dog. I was mid-discussion with Rip explaining to him that, well, there's no such thing as a trained dog. Dogs are always learning. They're evolving. You have to maintain these things. If you don't do things often enough, the conditioning falls apart. They can go extinct. Like all these different things. And then when he references it to Valerie, I'm like, oh, no, she's fully trained. I'll never do any training again. In total contradiction to what I had just said to him about Remy. Now, of course, they're on different things. Like Remy is training for a title that is very, very difficult, very hard to achieve title. And Val's just living her best life being a pet dog.
Mm.
But it occurred to me that I've been saying for a long time, well, there's no such thing as a finished dog, but there probably is. And I think that I wanted to just sort of explore and discuss the idea of like, when does training end? Does it ever end? And why would it end? What's your thoughts, sir?
I don't think it ever ends. I think it reduces.
Mm.
It reduces to necessity over need. If anyone's listening to that, they're probably thinking, hey, you just said the same thing in a different way. If we cast our memory back to when Dave Croyer was on the show, I was listening intently to him because he's a person that's been very heavily involved at high level sport dog training.
Mm-hmm. World champion level.
World champion level, super coach, all around nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He also reminded us that there is going to be a time where he's really looking forward at being done with it and having a dog at liberty so he can just enjoy the dog's life. And no doubt that dog, that family dog, will have training. There'll be certain house criteria, house rules that that dog is required to do. It's like every house that I've ever been in, there is a requirement of a dog to perform a certain way to fit in. And it's no different to us, man. You know, like we're required to act and behave a certain way all through our life, depending on where you are. So you might be with a group of people where you can be very loose and you can have a lot of fun and say things that are pretty outrageous. And you might be at an office party or an office. Let's remove office party. You might be just at the office where the culture is very subdued. You have to perform. You have to stay at your desk. You have to limit the amount of time you're talking to people. Even your sense of humor has to be kept at bay because you're expected to perform and required to give an output. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the same thing for our working dogs. Like, our working dogs are born into structure. There is a template of what's required to do, and they have to fit inside that template. They can't go outside the lines of that because the sport won't allow for it. Mm-hmm. You can't have too much variation because then the dog starts to become unclear, and the conditioning process that we're trying to develop is very disruptive to the mind of the dog. It can't comprehend, and therefore it can't control its outcomes well. So it's not good for the dog. It's not good for anybody. But for a dog that's living more of a life at liberty, dog that's a home dog, that's like hanging with your mates. Mm. You know, like, there's still social and ethical rules that you live by. You know, like, there was a certain group of friends that I used to hang with, and we always used to say, nothing's off the table but no mum jokes. You know, that was just the way, because we always said mum jokes are the ones that tend to make you upset.
Yeah,
so
no
mum jokes. That's kind of like the rule. There is still a rule. It's not like there's no rules. There's a rule. So house dogs get to live that rule. They get to live there, you know, like, you don't have to do the templated lifestyle of a sport or a working dog, but you do have rules. There are requirements of the house that you have to abide by.
Mm. Yeah, and I think as well, there's this gray zone. It's what we talked about a few episodes ago, or maybe it was one episode ago, I can't remember, where there's a lot of people who are training their dogs in what is observably a sport type fashion, but with no intention of ever doing a sport. You know, they've just gotten into training. And so they're training their dog every day. And probably that training, in a lot of cases of people who find themselves in that position, that training is keeping reactivity at bay. You know,
yeah,
like, that's probably what it's doing.
There's a couple of reasons why that happens.
Yeah. So the dog is, you know, it needs that fulfillment. It's bringing an inwards focus. It's stopping the dog, you know, developing anxieties about options when it's looking at the world and makes bad decisions. If it's been under socialized, maybe, you know, a really tight training session narrows the vision of the dog down to, like, see less of the world because the dog's just involved in working to performing to earn the reinforcer. So the dog gets to go out and be in the world, but it's not having to take everything in because it's just, you know, doing what it's been told to do or what it's working, you know, it's doing something to earn something. So I think this idea that there's ever a line in the sand where a dog is like, no, you crossed it. Now you're a trained dog, right? Mm. I don't know that that ever exists. And like I say, I don't really do much with Valerie beyond she accompanies me everywhere I go. She's in the car right now. Later on tonight, when I, like, usually when it's my turn at club to do stuff, because I wouldn't let her out while other people's dogs, because that would be derailing to the other dogs. But Remy doesn't give a fuck. He's used to her being running around all over the place. So while it's his turn, she'll just be somewhere in the background, hanging out, getting cuddled by people. She might run through the middle of our training session, and that's fine too, right? Like, it doesn't matter. She just comes everywhere, does all those things. But every now and again, I might call her and she gives me a look of like, do I have to? Those are the days where then, okay, we go to training session now. And I'd say, yes, you do have to. And I'm going to make sure that you do, but I'm going to make it worth your while as well. Like, every now and again, I just have to give her that top up of like, hey, you did it. Good work. Here's some sort of reinforcement that makes it more likely to happen again. But it also maybe like is like, here's some negative reinforcement because it's fucking happening. Like, I've told you to come back. You have to come back. So I think that this idea of a trained dog maybe is like a sliding scale, and the things that go into that, the markers along the way, is what is the ultimate goal for the dog, but then how well does the dog manage to maintain its training absent doing more of it, you know? And so, like, Valerie, for example, to keep using her, is she had a ton of really intense training. She was my project for a really long time. And when we first met, I was sort of in the community here in Sydney was a bit of a novelty because I was the guy that would turn, I was the army guy that would turn up the stuff with a really highly trained springer. And with a Malinois in the car that, like, yeah, I got one of those as well, but I've got a really highly trained springer. Right? Like, check this out. I got a springer that can do cool things.
I think that's why I took notice of you at the start, is because you pull that little dog out. And my experience with springers is they just run wildly around a field looking for odor. And then you pulled her out and she came to middle and started doing all this funky heeling. And, you know, I'm thinking, holy shit, I haven't seen a springer do that before.
I don't know if you remember. So the first time I had her out at an event and people saw her, it was Hans and Esther here at your place. And I had a working spot with her. And I was really interested in S's opinion and Han's also on whether her light chasing craziness could be dealt with, because she can see into dimensions that other beings can't see. Like, yep. she is so attracted to any sort of movement and any kind of sparkle that for most people, she would drive most people crazy. And if I hadn't had the ability to put as much training into her as I had, she would be unmanageable because she's so drawn to it. Mm. She's the kind of dog that if you shoot a laser at a wall, she will stare where that laser was for probably 2 hours or more. Like, she will just sit there and stare fully intently at it. And so if a leaf moves by, she has to chase it. If your watch catches a reflection, she'll madly chase that. The story is, you know, her father was imported. And if I remember correctly, I could be getting this slightly wrong, but the gist is correct, that he was imported and he spent like the full 6 months, I think, in quarantine. Like, his quarantine wasn't paperwork. It was in a kennel, I think. And he was sort of crazy like her. And they thought, well, he's gone crazy in the kennel. And then when they bred him, I'm like, oh no, that's genetic. You don't pass on going crazy in the kennel. I mean, there's maybe an epigenetics case that could be made for that, but the whole litter are the same. And her sister, Gidget, is apparently even worse than her, because the lady who got her does agility with pugs. And so she's used to having to build a lot of drive.
Yep.
And so can you imagine doing any drive building with Valerie? Could you imagine trying to put more in? Like, now she's an old lady. She's over 10. She's still more than most dogs at 10. But remember when she was young, man, she was off tap.
Like, she just wouldn't stop. Her greatest joy in life was being allowed to run free on the oval and just sprint for 15 minutes, like flat out around 5 acres.
Yeah, and she would just burn nonstop, like nose to the ground, following scent at the speed of light. I got that working spot because I was really interested in Esther's point of view. And so I brought her into the space in there. I said, hey, look, I got this problem with this Springer. She chases dust and light and anything that moves. And I showed them her doing it. And she's in that room in front of, you know, however many people, the 80 people or whatever, and all sitting around in a circle as she's like desperately, you know,
there's a whirly thing on top of that
is casting a shadow onto the ground that she's then like barking at and slamming her nose into the ground and all kinds of stuff. I remember them sort of saying like, well, it's going to be a very difficult thing to even manage control through. I was like, oh no, that's not an issue at all. And just called her back to me. We're like healing around in the room, doing a whole bunch of different impressive stuff for a 1-year-old Springer. And then when I tell her like, okay, we're done, she just flies back over to that spot. And then they're like, oh, okay, this is interesting now. Because I think, you know, having been in a similar position at seminars where people bring in a dog with a really heavily ingrained problem like that, you're kind of like, oh man, you're not going to be able to do anything about this because I don't know you. I don't know like your ability, but this is a very complex, difficult problem. And then when they saw the level of control that I had over her around those things, and she's off leash, you know, it's not like I'm compelling her to do anything. She's happily doing all this stuff. Then they were like, oh, now this is interesting. And I don't know if you remember, I'll never forget. They basically were like, there's nothing you can do about this.
Yeah, I remember that.
This is so deeply genetically ingrained that maybe when it first presented itself, like if you had managed to punish it at the very first presentation, but no, good luck. This is it. You, like with the dust chasing, one of the thing that I think has been really important to her is when I see her spool up over something like that and make her hold a Kong or a ball or something like that, and she can download the stress. Because what's always been my concern for her with that is she can never catch it, you know? Yeah. That's the issue. And I think that's one of the things with those obsessive compulsive sort of things on dogs of that type. They can never catch the dust. They can never catch the light. They can never catch the laser. When you can get to it and hit it as much as you want, there's no satisfaction. There's no end to it. And that's what spools her up.
I'm about to go into a TV show reference.
Oh.
Have you ever seen the show The Good Doctor?
I'm aware of it. I've never really watched it.
The character plays an autistic doctor. He's brilliant. They do this cutaway where he can see human anatomy and he can come up with an on-the-spot diagnosis of what's going on because his mind is incredibly complex. So they did this cutaway show where he met this lawyer while he was getting legal advice. This is like later into the seasons. They were going to do this spin-off called The Good Lawyer because she had some sort of OCD or autism as well.
Mm.
What she had to do was she had to finish things in threes. So if she was talking to someone, she had to tap her hand. She had to go three times.
Yeah, right.
And if she didn't complete the third one, there was a voice in her head say, complete the third one or something terrible is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would like build and build and build. And it was like shouting in her head. And she was in court. Long story short, her company didn't want her to go into court, even though she's brilliant, because she gets fixated on certain things. So the opposing legal team were talking to her, and the guy leans back in his chair and it goes, squeak. And she goes, that's one, in her head. And he's talking again, and she gets him to do it a second time, and he goes, squeak, but he doesn't pull off the third one. So she literally has a meltdown in court.
Mm.
Her mentor is frustrated about this and says, you know, like you're literally locked up because she's staring at her opponent and she can't complete the discussion, like her points that she's trying to raise in this case, because she's fixated on that point. So it made me think about your complexities around Valerie's not being able to complete it, or anybody not going to be able to complete those sort of things.
Yeah.
For somebody who is very task orientated and also has an obsession around it, not being able to complete it is one of the ultimate forms of lack of control.
Mm.
And lack of control for anybody. I was listening to a podcast on this the other day. There was a lady talking. Narelle and I were doing stuff for her business the other day. I was helping her out. And she was actually listening to the podcast, and it was a lady talking about neurology, and she really went into being in control and being able to control your environment. But I can't remember the actual technical word she used for it, but it was fascinating nonetheless. I've always been an advocate for this. I've always called things the illusion of control. This is why we have to build this scaffolding around dogs when we're developing the architecture of behavior, because we need them to feel in control of the moment. Because without that, it's very confrontational.
Mm.
And I know for myself that if I feel out of control by something, it can stir up some very unhinged and unhealthy thoughts.
Mm.
Like I don't feel like I completed something. I think it was last week's episode we talked about this whole SCOBY thing. I was able to let it go because I felt like I got to where I needed with it.
Mm.
Whereas before that, the reason I kept doing it and the reason it spun out of control is because I didn't feel like I'd mastered enough of it, like I didn't know enough about it. And it was frustrating to Narelle because, you know, like at one stage I had 60 jars with SCOBYs in them because I kept feeling like, no, this is not working properly. It's not the way it should be. It doesn't look like it looks online when I'm watching other people do it. It's not right. Something's wrong. I can't do this. And I need to fix it. I need to fix the puzzle. And then it happened. I got it. It came to fruition and I was able to close out on it. So I let it go after that.
Mm.
I'm empathizing with your thoughts on Valerie because now I can relate to it. And I think sometimes we don't relate to these sort of things, which is easy for us to move on because we're looking at it from our perspective. And we've talked about the dynamic of perspective before. I think perspective of anything, thinking about outside your body and being outside the argument sometimes and having a look at how the whole environment works out, which is why some of us are able to socially adjust to difficult environments and some of us just aren't, is because some of us don't give a fuck about it, where others do. Like we actually think, no, I want this to go right. I have to step outside myself and allow this conversation to happen around me as if I'm not involved in it. Mm. Otherwise, if I do have a stake in this, this is where it will get uncomfortable very quickly and unravel itself. Once again, these are only experiences that develop later in life. I wish I knew things like this when I was 20 and I could shut my mouth at some of the things I really would prefer not to have been involved in or said when I was a younger guy. But there's no way of knowing this until you know it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's interesting your reference to that show about everything happening in threes and having to close the loop. I think that definitely is very applicable to dog training because some dogs are very much like that. And once you start it, like we did a whole episode on it, once you run the program, right? So like once you start it up, they need to see it all the way through or there's going to be effects.
Well, they're in punishment territory at that point in time.
Yeah.
So it's very much the negative without the reinforcement.
Yeah.
They're sitting on that side of the fence. So there's no learning happening and there's just layering of frustration building around it. But the problem with that, it's like a cancer. It fucking spreads to different areas.
Mm.
When we start to see obtuse sort of behaviors from our dogs, we don't know why they're popping up. But some of the times it's because we've left a loop open that needed to be closed.
Mm, very much.
I think.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. I think actually, you're with my two dogs, the reason I can call Valerie a trained dog and Remy in training is because as a dog that is trained, I'm not actually holding anything over her. Like I don't actually really give her any reinforcers. she eats from a bowl every day, twice a day, and I throw the ball for her and we play tug. But aside from getting her to out the thing so that we can do another rep, I don't really tell her to do anything, right? There's no behaviors that are in maintenance, but also there's nothing being reinforced that pushes her off the center line that I need her to be on, right? First of all, that center line is quite broad because I give her a lot of freedom of action. She can do mostly whatever she wants. She is a house dog, so she's got unlimited access to my house. She goes wherever she wants within the house.
Yep.
Trust me, I'm aware. That's why the only thing I end up usually telling her to do is get out from under my feet because she's constantly under my feet.
Yep.
But what I need from her is quite broad. But there isn't really anything that can easily derail her from that center line that I need her to stay on. Whereas with Remy, because his center line that I need from him is very narrow and he's so drawn to certain things, you know, whether it's just the gameplay, he still obsessively chases birds given the opportunity. He's so drawn to the decoys in the bite work. He's so repelled by people. So in a group setting, he never would sit with a group of people. He'll always sit by himself. You know, usually at club, certainly when we train at my place, he goes last and then he stays out and we all sort of talk. And if anybody else's dog is out last, the dog's in the group. The dog's like, well, I'm part of the gang. I want to be here. Not a chance for my fucking dog. Not a chance. He's on the outer of the group. He doesn't want to hang out with people. So like he's so drawn to some things and repelled by others that those really heavy draws are very easy to take him off that center line of where I need him on. And it's very easy for me to accidentally put too much weight into one thing over another. You know, if I do too much of one thing, then he becomes a dog that does that, you know? And if I don't do enough of something, he's a dog that doesn't do that, you know? And so being able to maintain that balance. So I think that one of the reasons why I'm reflecting on a lot of stuff at the moment, right? One of the reasons why I've called him retired and then just gone like, oh, fuck it, you're going to do Mondio, right? And done a Mondio trial, right? And I've called him retired again and said, oh, I shouldn't have even done that Mondio trial. And now I'm getting ready to have another crack at a PSA trial is because he's not retired. What am I going to do, not work a Malinois that lives in my house? Like, that's impossible.
In the discussion you were having before, listening to some of those points you're making about his retirement, moving him in and out. He's never really left the scene.
Like no, never, never.
He's where if you comparably, if you look at Val has been wound down. She has no longer been required to do those sort of things. And I think you gently allowed those springs to unwind with Val, whereas with Remy, it's never been the case.
No, no.
You know, like you kind of played the sporting dog hokey pokey with him. Like you've taken him out, put him back in, taken him out, put him back in. But he's never really been out, you know, like he's still been, oh, well, if there's a decoy that needs to show something, I'm going to do it with Remy. If there's a certain skill I want to show somebody, I'm going to pull Remy out and do it.
Exactly.
So he's never really looked at it like, oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
Or this is winding down. Like you're just reducing everything and literally suffocating all the other behaviors. Like it's kind of like, if anything, it's been that he's done more of and he's had more endurance added to it.
100%. And exactly. So yeah, all year he's been training decoys.
Yeah.
So he's been just doing bite work.
Yeah.
Right. And he's happy to do it. And he's happily just biting the shit out of people. But I then am like, well, I can't have a dog. Like, I can't have that. I can't have a dog that does nothing but bite work, or I'm going to lose fucking control of this dog.
Mm.
And I need to maintain total control out of this dog. So I have to continue to do the obedience because I'm doing the bite work. You know, he's Malinois. Whether his body's falling apart or not, he still has the same amount of drive. So I have to find ways for him to be able to express that drive, even when he's injured. You know, for a short period of time, I can lock him in the box, but that's not sustainable. He'll go crazy. And in order to keep him happily living in the house, I have to keep challenging him. One of the things that intermittently at my home, a pillow will be destroyed, right? And Jane always blames Remy straight away. And I'm always like, I don't see that. And it's never happens when someone's around, right? We'll come home and it'll just be one of the corners of the pillows will be chewed out. And
why don't you get a cam?
Well, we did. Guess what happens? Have a guess to the process of how pillows get destroyed in my house.
It would probably be a team skill where they are prompting each other, like who goes first. I would probably say that Val and Remy both equally know that it's off limits, but also the forbidden apple of it is enticing and they both want to have a go, and then one does it and then they go, fuck.
Close.
Okay.
Remy does the zippers on the pillows when no one's around. He bites with his tiny little front teeth, the zipper,
yep,
on the pillowcase. Like, you know, the sofa pillows, right? Like the ones that you throw around, the throw pillows, I suppose they're called. He will get to the zipper with his front teeth, lifts that up and just zips it back and forth, right? Yep. It's like a challenge he sets for himself. But sometimes the way that, you know, the zipper's put back away, either by him or by me, you can't get to it. And he gets all frustrated at it. And then he's like,
chew it out.
Well, then fuck you, right? And he'll attack at it. And then Valerie's like, yeah, we're fucking up pillows. And comes running in and finishes the job.
Yep.
So she basically like steals it from him. And once he's got it going, she then is like, yeah, let's tear it apart. And then the pair of them, I've got the footage of it.
Mm.
The pair of them then like within, you know, it's 30 seconds of madness, and then they both don't acknowledge each other. In the footage that I had, Valerie goes upstairs because she's like, oh, I can't even be around it. Like, she takes herself upstairs, and Remy gets back on the couch and is like, pretends it never happened, right? And so that's, I think, an interesting insight into their lives, is that he has to be challenged. And if I don't challenge him enough, he will challenge himself via undoing the zippers on the pillows. Like, that's, he's like, well, this is entertaining. This is a really difficult, precise task that I have to put myself through and figure out how to do. And if for whatever reason he can't pull it off, it's actually a really good example of, he gets what is quite appetitive to him. He enjoys it, becomes frustration. Frustration becomes aggression. That aggression ends up in destruction. If you could look at it from a more pack look, once he kicks into that level of drive and starts destroying something, Valerie, who is happily running around in circles, not biting anything, just goes, fuck yeah, let's destroy shit together, right? And like the groupthink takes over the pair of them and they wreck stuff. So I think it's a fun conversation, and especially to really try and understand your dogs. I think that for us as trainers, that's one of our main goals, is to really be able to get in the head of our dogs and understand, like, how come you do this stuff, man? And not just at the surface level. And we've all been in people's homes and they attribute a lot of, you know, their dog's behaviors and their dog's eccentricities to things that we know are nonsense. Like the classic that every dog trainer's had is, my dog's protecting me. And you're like, he ain't protecting shit, right? He's terrified. He is protecting himself. As soon as you drop that lead, he's the fuck out of here. He ain't protecting you. That is for sure, right? We've all been in those situations.
100%.
But we've been in people's houses where they attribute the peculiarities of their dog to various things.
Do you know why they do that?
Well, it's the need to fill the gap in knowledge, right?
Well, that's right. It's the limitations of their knowledge.
Yeah.
That's why they're calling you in as the expert, is because they've come up with this wild summary of events to try and explain away why their dog would do this audacious style of behavior. You know, like, I went and did a lesson the other day where somebody brought a rescue dog into the home, and the dog that is their baby, they were very upset about the way the two of them were behaving, and they came up with some theories. And as I said to them, this is a management system that you go through, because they were asking me a bunch of stuff. And I said, it's the normal question everyone asks. Why does the dog do that? Like, why is it doing that? And I said, that's why we're here. Like, we're here to discover it. And I said, sometimes I actually don't know why that dogs do certain things until I observe behavior over a period of time. And I said, really, for us, that's the only model that we can actually work on, is we can't actually get the information out of their head. It just doesn't appear to us that way. It appears through the actions of behaviors. And I said, and when you see it replicate enough, but you see what's triggering it, like the stimuli that presents them with the thought process to eventually behave that way, and if you're just in the right angle, it's like photography. If you're just at that right angle, you'll get the best picture of what you're trying to take. But if you're at the wrong angle, it can all be fucked up, and then you can start theorizing about things again. Mm. And I said, as dog trainers, we come up with theories over periods of time. Like, there's been times where I've theorized over things that I've seen dogs do, and it's been wrong because I've just been at the wrong angle of thinking. I haven't seen the behavior present enough times, or seen the eliciting stimuli there that's getting the thought inside their head. Yeah, it's quite a remarkable process when you're actually watching people working and thinking and trying to structure everything to try and get some clarity and calm. Because you know why? They want to be in control.
Mm.
And that's where we circled back to before, is because the more you think about it, when people feel out of control with anything and dogs feel out of control with anything, it really leaves that loop open and it causes a lot of fuckery in how you think and interact and develop relationships and everything, because the loop is open and it's just sucking all the oxygen out of the air for you. So instead of thinking about, oh, I can move on now, you're not. You're not thinking about moving on. You're thinking, I can't fucking function because this loop is open and all my scobies are fucking failing.
Yeah.
One of the funniest ones, I don't know if I've ever spoken about on the podcast, I've certainly told a lot of people, is just looking at the way my dogs interact with each other in the home.
Mm.
Valerie kind of rules over Remy most of the time with a bit of an iron fist, right? She really keeps him in check. And one day we were in Rip's room. I think me and him were building a Lego thing or something like that. Valerie was in there with us and I could hear Remy walking up the stairs. The way he was coming up, I knew he was coming up with fuckery on his mind, right? Like, because it wasn't just a normal walk up the stairs. Like, he kind of trotted a little bit up the stairs. Like, he'd, and for sure, he was downstairs and he's just going, I'm going to go look for trouble. Something has kicked me into drive, whatever it is. I'm going up there to just cause mayhem. And so he comes to walk into Rip's room. Like, I can see he's got like a smile on. He's kind of like going to saunter in. Valerie flies over, bites him in the neck and tells him he can't come in the room, right? Yep. Then he's like standing outside like, oh, I'm trapped. Rips immediately, his first reaction is like, oh, she's so mean to him. And I'm like, yeah, but she allows him to live the life that he has, because he was for sure coming in here to be a pain in the ass. He was going to come in here and I was then going to have to go and put him in the kennel or put him outside or whatever, because he was coming in here with a level of drive and arousal that is not appropriate for being in here. So she kept him out and I watched him over the next 5-10 minutes have to come down in his arousal at the door. And this is the entry to Rip's room. He's like spinning in a circle and then huffing and puffing and then lays on the floor and then suddenly gets up, normal Malinois shit, and then brings himself down to a lower level of arousal and then walks into the room and she let him come straight in.
Mm.
Then I'm confronted with, does she not like him coming in there at that level of arousal, or is she doing that because she knows that I'll like that she does it, or is she doing that for his sake so that he doesn't get in the box? Because it has to be one of those three things. Which one do you reckon it could be? And I'll never know. There is no way to measure that.
Do you think that she'd be doing it for you though, or ultimately for her?
Well, they're probably one and the same. I think that she identifies us as having joint interest, you know?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Usually it's always for the sake of the dog. The more that I came to terms with that, because I mean, I was stuck in that camp as well, where I used to believe that my dog did things to make me happy.
Mm.
And I think they're very compassionate and complimentary in a lot of ways, but I also think ultimately they are very selfish.
Mm.
You know, like they kind of think, well, this makes me feel good. So that's the way I'm going to do things, because that closes my loop in that sort of situation. But I think if you really get down to brass tacks of it, we'll never really know.
Nah.
And it's interesting, those three diagnosis points that you put up together, like to think of three ultimate pillars of why would the dog think of it, because they're all very rational reasons why she may have done it.
Yeah. My feeling on it is that she's like, hey, you're going to wreck a good thing. That's it. I think that's as far as she thinks ahead. Right now, I like how things are in here. And you're coming in here. And
especially if she's experienced that before.
Yeah.
Like if there's been.
Which she has many, many times.
Yeah. And that's fair to say. I mean, because ultimately that comes back down to selfishness. This is the vibe I like and you're going to wreck it.
Yeah.
I mean, we do that to each other too. I have worked very hard to keep people out of groups before because I know they're going to fuck the vibe up.
Yeah.
I've thought, I don't want you in this group.
Personally. Yeah, things are good.
Things are good. We're all getting along fine. Everyone's happy. Like you will be the outlier that will stir the fucking shit. Like you shouldn't be in this group.
But it's interesting to me, right, because I don't group punish them, right? So if he had come in and been a pain in the ass, it's only him that gets taken away.
Yeah,
she
but the vibe
the
stops.
Exactly.
Like the that's the thing is then instead of that like little family huddle and the harmony, like everybody scatters and moves out of the room. So it's not directly associated with any direct form of positive punishment, but ultimately it's negative punishment because she thinks I was nice and chilled and I was meditating and I was in the room and everything was nice and huddled together and we're all having a bit of love time and now this fucker comes in the room and every time that picture is presented, the whole family disperses.
Mm-hmm.
So that the gathering where I was sitting at everyone's feet and people were stroking me with their foot or something like that, that's gone. Like that's not going to happen because this motherfucker is coming in with that attitude.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
Yeah, that's what I think. But so to round it out, as I think about all these interactions between my dogs, the way that they work in and out of drive, the way that they just live with me, the way that they go places with me, the things that I do with them causes me to think, you know, because I can really only get deep into the thoughts of this stuff with my own dogs and then infer it to others because they're the ones that I spend 24/7 with, is that I think a trained dog is once that dog hits a level of balance, the training stops, right? So like once the dog just fits the level and if life changes, then so too the training has to restart, right? And with Remy, because he's not a dog that's really going to be capable of ever doing nothing, he's so drawn to so many things and the way that he's drawn to them can be dangerous, right? Not like he's a dangerous dog, but he likes to fuck shit up. Like he's a lot. He's a Malinois, right?
Yeah,
like
all Malinois. He needs to put his energy somewhere.
Yeah, like he's a Malinois. That's what they do. And so he will perhaps, so long as his drives are what they are, will never be a trained dog. He will be a dog in training. I will constantly, if we're bowling, we're hitting off the, what are they called? The rails on the gutter. Like he's bouncing side to side. And I have to keep like a bounce off one and he's in the middle for a little while and then he'll bounce off the other. And I am those rails that has to keep course correcting him into being what I need from him to be, because he's a dog that has so much draw to things. And I think that, you know, he's an extremely stable dog, but he's still very drawn to things. So pick that template up is that if you have a reactive dog, if you have a dog that has some really strong urge that needs to be met that you can't do within your home and within normal training. So like you've got a Kelpie that wants to herd or, you know, insert thing here of dog that must do, you got a Pity that needs to pull things or whatever it is. You're constantly going to be doing those things so long as the dog keeps hitting the gutter on either side. And it's only so long as that the ball is just sliding down the middle of the aisle that, like it is with Valerie, that I can then go, well, that's a trained dog. I have the training that I will need. But if I were to move, if my life were to radically change in some way, then she would be back to being a dog in training because now I have to start adjusting the way that she does stuff. She's going to be hitting those gutters and I need to be making sure that I keep her within that center line. So I think it's relevant not just to what you're looking to achieve with the dog would determine when you can say, well, that's a trained dog. There's no further training required. Not just what you're looking to achieve, but also what the dog is drawn to and how it's drawn to it. Those are the main two factors that are going to go into deciding, is my dog a trained dog or is my dog in training?
Look out. Here comes a guitar association.
Do it.
Every time you think you've got somewhere, there's another door to open. The only reason I brought that up is because I know that every time we kind of think that we've got our dog to a level, that's only one floor of a multi-tiered skyscraper. You know, let's not say we're going to get all the way to the penthouse, but the penthouse is the potential. Like if you look at the model and you're thinking to yourself, we could go this far, there's going to be some things that will limit that along the way. Like it could be the genetics of the dog. It could be time that you're putting into it. It could be your training director. There could be a bunch of things. The reason why you might never hit the full potential of that ceiling. So what started off as 50 floors might get to 43. Still very good. The point you made before about the trained dog versus a dog in training, I like that. That sent some gears spinning in my head when I started thinking about that. We often relate to the experiences that we have with our own dogs. A lot of yours are with Remy and Val, and I'm currently watching Randy go through some frustrations and some madness at the moment, and especially on Thursday nights when he can hear the dogs here. He digs up the backyard, he picks up rocks, and he starts carting rocks around. You know, and he's been doing this a little bit more and more lately because he really feels like he's been benched. There's not much I can do about that because I can't really. Because
he's been benched.
Because he's been benched. There is no getting Randy out and doing cool dog working stuff with him anymore because he's at the stage now where he'll break his teeth.
Yeah.
He will hurt himself. He's not walking properly when he runs and he comes to a halt. Randy was noble and agile and tough and very, very strong dog. He's a fraction of that now, but so am I compared to who I used to be when I was in my 20s and 30s. You know, like my capability now is very different than what it used to be. The pain that I feel over certain things now, just going out and getting into, well, not getting into fights, but being involved in sporting fights and stuff like that, the next day you'd be up and out at the pub drinking. You'd just been doing like 3 to 6 rounds of getting wailed on and hitting the ribs and hitting the face and stuff like that. And you'd be going, yeah, cool, let's go down the pub. And you'd have swelling and bruising. Mate, if that happened now, I'd be in bed for a week. I'd be in bed for a week. So
I accidentally stayed up too late the other day and it took me 4 days to recover.
But it happens, right? Like the things that we used to be able to do, even on the weekend doing the judging for the day, I stood for like 8 or 9 hours in the paddock while I was assessing dogs and walking backwards and forwards between all the routines and going into the admin area to do all the adding up and signing everything and stuff like that. Man, that night I stayed with Casey. He hired this little bungalow sort of thing and we bunked together. Mate, I had to fucking stretch my calves out for about a good half an hour before I could get to sleep because they were barking.
Mm.
That never happened. I've been in fields all day long. That's the things that I've been doing. We used to do, you know, like when we were in Kilsyth when I was working for Boyd, Thursday nights it would be from, I'd get there at 6 and I'd sometimes leave at like 2 in the morning. We'd be training dog after dog after dog. It would just be this cycle of never-ending dogs. It just never seemed to stop. There were so many. We'd start going into training and theorizing and going back into training. You just bounce back. You get into bed by 3 o'clock, I'd be up at 7 o'clock to work again. Yeah, like it never happened. Didn't miss a beat. Could go the whole day and do it all over again. These days, the same thing as you, you know, like you do those and you're kind of thinking, I need a week's holiday. I'm fucked.
Yeah. That's life. We're getting old.
And so are our dogs. Yeah.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say?
What are we going
to
say?
And I'm going to say at the beginning of next episode, because the end is a stupid place to put an ad. Well, it's not an ad. It's an ad. Yeah. The next trial in Australia for PSA is ours. It's our club. And so we're having a whole bonanza that we're putting on. It's a big whole show and song and dance.
There's a lot of it. There's lots of different little elements happening.
Yeah. So for the people in Australia, and I was going to say Sydney, but it's Australia. Like this is, people are traveling from all over the place. There's people coming from, you know, as far as Perth to come to the trial. We are doing a trial on the 8th and 9th of June, and we're doing it at the Windsor Polo Club. So instead of doing it here, which is way more convenient for us, we're doing it at a place which is bigger and we can have a bigger crowd and we can put on more of a spectacle and there's more parking and blah, blah, blah. And so 8th and 9th of June is our trial for at Windsor Polo Club for anybody who wants to come and watch. It's, of course, it's a totally free event. It's come and have a watch and see what it is. There's going to be raffles and all kinds of like really cool prizes. I've sort of, thankfully, there's people in the club who are doing a lot of the organizing that I'm not so hands-on in it. But some of the prizes that they've got for the raffles are incredible. Like it's a big deal stuff. People have donated some really incredible things. Then the following 2 days, we're doing a decoy certification. So that is, you know, for people to become certified as PSA decoys. If you haven't been training for that, don't get in touch with me and say you want to do it. It's not learning how to decoy. It's being tested. So it's not where you rock up and have a go, but you can watch those dudes do it. And it is a spectacle because it is a hard couple of days. So if you've traveled and you want to stick around, you've been there for the trial, stick around for another 2 days and watch those guys get put through the ringer to certify.
Right?
No, that's at the Windsor Polo Club as well.
Right.
And then Wednesday is going to be off and then we're here in Drool and Sean is teaching his Deadpool decoy school here.
Right.
That is where you can learn to decoy. Mm. Now, Sean's Deadpool decoy school, it's not a PSA thing. It's developing a dog. He's an expert at that. It's developing big confident grips in dogs that no matter their application, it doesn't matter. It's so you don't need to be even interested in PSA. If you're a police military type person or security, whatever, you're going to benefit massively from his stuff. I've done his school. It's incredible. It's 2 days there. And the best thing about his school is it's very modular. So whether you're brand new, you've never done anything before, or you're very experienced, you're going to get a lot from it, right?
He's one of the best decoys in the world, especially in PSA, but he is a world-class decoy.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yep.
And the beauty of the way that Sean does it, like, yes, he is super talented, but it's methodical and it's systematized. So you don't need to have the magic touch to be able to do it. That's the thing. So like a lot of the good decoys you see have the magic touch. They just are able to get in tune with the dog and they can do the things that's necessary, but they can't fucking teach you that. And the one session you get with them is going to benefit your dog for that session. But if you don't keep having access to those people, it's not going to have like a huge impact on the dog's life. The way that Sean teaches his schools, it's systematized.
Yep.
Do this, then you do this, then you do this. So even a dummy like me can end up in a position where you go like, oh, I know what to do here. I do this until the dog shows me competence in that and then I go on to the next step. It's perfect. So if you're interested in learning that, and then the pièce de résistance is the final event that we're doing, which is Janet doing her handler workshop, which I am super excited to attend.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's Janet Edwards.
Director of judges for PSA.
Super experienced PSA competitor, two dogs to level three and got two more on the way presently, is doing her dog sport handling workshop. Now, of course, she's an expert in PSA. That's what she does. But it's about how to get on the field and handle a dog in dog sport. So it doesn't matter whether you're interested in any sport. You could be an agility person, rally-o, whatever. It is going to help you because it's about how to bring a dog into competition, not just how to bring a dog into that competition. That's our club that's organizing that. And we really are looking to have a really big event where we bring a lot of people together and really bring the community together. And so even if you're not interested in ever doing PSA, but you want to come and watch a trial, it's a fun day. PSA is designed to be, it's a spectator sport as well as competing. It's fun to see what's going on there. And what we've been doing in Australia, which is not typical around the world, but what we've been doing and hopefully for the remainder of this year anyway, we'll continue to do is I act as something of a MC of the event and explain to people what's going on.
You do an amazing job when you do
that. Well, I like doing it because I like talking, as you can tell. But the main thing is that what I've always thought is that dog sport can be quite boring. If you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know, like, did that go good or did that go bad? Like, you can't, you don't know,
it's
right?
It's just left to the crowd to ooh and ah and wonder what's happening. And then you find out like a tiny critique from the judge at the end.
Yeah. So what we've been doing is explaining along the way what's happening so that there's more buy-in from the crowd. And there's been great feedback about that. So if you want to be a part of that kind of thing, come along to this trial. It's going to be a bonanza. That's what we're calling it. And I'm really excited about it. So I'm going to tell you guys about that at least a couple more times before it actually happens, because we're really trying to get as many people there as possible. And bang for your buck, you can come to the trial and watch the decoy, so it's not going to cost you anything. And the pricing on the Deadpool Decoy School and the handling workshop, I'm not going to say the prices because it's variable. There's early bird things. And if you bundle, if you get two, it's cheaper and all that kind of stuff. So jump onto the Iron Fist website, which is ironfistpsa.com.au, I think it is. And you'll have all the details there. You can find it on my Facebook. You can find it on my website, which is seriousdogbusiness.com, and go to the events tab and you'll see it there, and that'll link you to the Iron Fist site. You can't miss it. We're trying to make it a whole thing.
Or just go into the Canine Paradigm discussion group and ask somebody in there, and Tanawa or somebody will throw you a lifeline.
You'll be bombarded with information.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it. That's my rant. All right. That's it for the episode. See ya. All right. If you want to get in contact with that, no, what do we say? Please like, rate, share, subscribe.
Do it
through whatever subscription service you download us from. That is a big help. As annoying as that is to do and seems like it's pointless, it's not.
It's falling off.
Yeah.
I think the love is starting to come to a bit of a tarnish at the moment.
Are you saying they don't love us?
A little bit less. There's just not the same. There used to be a big enthusiasm. And
I'll tell you what I got during this week. I don't know whether it was a recent episode we put out or maybe the universe felt like I needed an ego boost. I don't know. But this week I got nearly a dozen emails or messages or just the various ways that people get in contact with us.
Yep.
People I don't know just giving incredible feedback and thanking us for the podcast. And it's funny how things come at the right time. It feels amazing. It warms the cockles of my heart when people send a message. And some of them are incredible and people actually saying, it's hard to even explain. It seems ridiculous since we're just two dickheads talking to microphones, but people have like literally said that we've saved their lives.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
That's really big.
Huge one, right?
That's big.
Tell iTunes that.
Well, you don't have to tell them that we saved the life. No, but I agree with you, mate. There's a lady in New Zealand, Monique Rana, I think her name is. She just had to have an operation with her dog where the dog had glaucoma in the eye and both its eyes had to be removed. So she's dealing with that, but the dog's doing really well. She's got like a little halo for its head. So she's adjusting to life with no eyes. One thing I really appreciated about Monique is she's very complimentary. She likes something about an episode, she tells me why. Mm-hmm. So she will generally have a little dialogue with me backwards and forward saying, hey, I just wanted to let you know I really needed something that you put in the episode the other day and it was just at a perfect timely moment. Following on from what you said, it's nice that we still know that people are out there. And
yeah.
I guess what most people are searching for in life is some form of relevancy. And it's nice to show that we have relevancy in the show. Like, it's for a purpose. It's not just us wailing on. Like, I don't think we'd want to do this if we were just boring a bunch of people and they just think, this is just old hat. They're just telling the same shit all over again. We're trying to be very versatile in what we're doing, you know, like we're bringing guests on and everything like that. But you guys are our audience. Like, we want to have a relationship with you.
Your feedback is super important.
It is. We need to know, is it relevant? Is it not relevant? Is there a directional change that you want us to take? The only way that we will know is if you take time to tell us. And if you are enjoying the show, like if you do like what you're hearing and the show is appealing to you and you haven't done a review before, it'd be really appreciated.
There you go. If you want to support the show, best way to do that is jump into Patreon. Bunch of cool stuff in Patreon.
We'll take your money.
Yeah, we will for sure. we got Apple Vision Pros to buy. Although
I don't think it's going to happen.
We're not getting them.
No.
And I found out actually the one thing that I really wanted to use them for, you can't use.
Oh, really? What?
To edit in Final Cut, just what I use to edit video, you can only clone like a single screen. So you can have as big a Final Cut screen as you want,
right,
but only a single one.
So you can't do multiple screens.
Nah, and
is that going to be fixed in software?
Probably. But I like having three different screens. That's why I've got the setup that I do, because then it's just easier. And so you can have one giant screen, but you can't have multi-screen. I think the thing with Apple Vision Pro, this is now the Apple Vision Pro podcast, is I don't think that's for us. I don't think it's a consumer product. I think it's a developer product. I think that Apple went, hey, here's everything that a headset could have.
Yep.
They've put it to market and they've gone, you guys figure out what the fuck we're going to actually do with this
make
thing.
Stuff for us so we can make a better version.
Yeah,
for,
and for then Gen 2 and Gen 3 will be specialized for whatever you guys figure out is the way to use this thing. Make apps, make games, make things. And then the next version will better suit the things you have made. That's what I feel like has happened.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like a Gen 1 product. It's like it's got everything. It's not like, it's not much to build onto it. It looks like more to me they're going to take things
except
out of it.
Except that goofy looking battery.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, for sure. That's weird. And and that it's such a, like a, is it like 14,000 milliamp? What a weird,
it's just
what a weird size battery to
have. It's an inconvenience that you've got to put in your pocket with a great big lead. Like, yeah.
But I mean, what's the alternative? You wear it on your head and more weight?
Well, the Oculus, you can do all that. And
yeah, but it doesn't have the same computing power. Anyway, we want them. So we're never going to get them.
So just like if you need to, you know, go into your trust fund or anything like that and just delete a bunch of cash out of that and deposit.
Patreon.
Stick it in Patreon. Just say, look, it's just a love gift.
Yeah.
Here's the one wheel of your Lamborghini.
My brother has a Lamborghini, right? He actually has multiple. Yep. And he's a car guy. It's his thing. It's what he does. And I was super tempted one time to get out of his Lamborghini and do like a big thank you to Patreon for buying me the camera that I'm filming this on.
Well, that's funny you say that, because I go to a meeting at the people who own the company. Their father has a car dealership in Sydney called Scuderia Graziani.
Oh, yeah. No.
And if you ever want a really nice luxury car, go and see Tony at Scuderia Graziani. Great guy. And the cars are exceptional down there. And I've been down there and I've been sitting in $1.3 million cars. And I was going to do the same sort of thing. I was thinking, wouldn't this be cheeky? And I'm thinking, somebody might take it seriously.
Yeah,
and go,
that's exactly what
I mean. You piece of shit. You know, like, look at you living off our dime.
Yeah, exactly.
When that's everything opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. We do appreciate it. And we appreciate we do appreciate so much the people who have stuck with us on Patreon because, you know.
Absolutely. It's incredible.
It's never, ever, not one time that I've ever looked at Patreon, I've ever taken it for granted that people around the world have found something of value in just supporting. And there's people who do it just for that. They've never listened to an episode on there before.
Yeah.
They couldn't care less. It's just literally for supporting our show and their way. Creators call it buying me a coffee. I guess that's the thing that I've looked at. And I've just looked at that and I thought that is just remarkable.
The financial support of Patreon is incredible for sure. And we put in a lot of money to get all of the stuff going and we've always wanted to keep it at the front edge and Patreon allows us to do that for sure. But the financial support, I love it. Absolutely. But when I was getting ready to launch the course, and I still haven't launched it publicly, it's only people in Patreon who have been sent the link. Like, it's on my website, people can buy it, but I haven't told anyone about it. I'm not pushing it.
Yep.
When I wanted people to test it, it occurred to me like, oh, these are the people that I can get incredible feedback from. Mm. And they have. Glenn, some of the fucking emails have been sent from people who have bought my course. So I put it into the Patreon and said, hey, it's ready. Here's a significant discount to buy it. But the real reason I want you to buy it is, yes, I want you to have it. I want you to have access to the information. And this is my, yeah, this is my income. This is how I'm going to make money. But I want true feedback.
Yep.
Mate, some of the emails I've gotten would have taken hours to write.
Yeah, remarkable.
And people with like screenshots and little things like there's a spelling mistake here, but some of them even incredible detail of like the landing page after you buy says, check your inbox for login details, but then the actual email that come doesn't have the word login details. So like they even went to the details of like, well, if I couldn't find it and I was searching for it, I would search the phrasing that you used here. And so really fucking poignant feedback that would have taken hours to do.
Jeez, we've got some amazing people.
Incredible,
mate.
Incredible. Incredible.
I love that about them.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys more than you could ever know. Thank you very much. Mm. We also have t-shirts.
We do. At spring.
Yeah. Get them.
No underwear, no thongs, like flip-flops.
Flip-flops, yeah.
Yep.
But t-shirts we have and tapestries we have.
Yes, we have tapestries and people have purchased our tapestry.
Yeah. I need a tapestry. I just realised the other day I don't have one in the shop.
Would you like to get one? Organise one for you?
Yeah, Nick, if you
Will
next
you
time
give me
in
the
there.
Diameters and I'll get you a tapestry?
Enormous.
The biggest one we can get? The one we've got in the shed is like fucking enormous. That's the biggest size.
Yeah, I don't know where I'd put that though.
Yeah.
Maybe I need a smaller one.
That's what I'm saying. Get the diameters.
Yeah,
okay. Casey's got one in his
shed. Yeah, he's got the biggest one. Yeah. All right, so do that. And if you want to get in touch with us, best way to do that is to jump into the discussion group. There's always interesting stuff happening in there. That's really the only place in Facebook that I use very much.
Yeah, it's the only place that I go to regularly. That and the Dog Trainers Lounge.
Yeah, there as well.
They're the only real two areas.
I feel like we fucked them up a little bit.
Did we?
Yeah. How? Like, well, I think after Tracy was on the show, there was a big influx of people there and I've seen they got it under control, but I feel like we might have driven.
Just let the madhouse go in there.
Maybe. Maybe we spawned a shut light on. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that, Tracy. But jump into the discussion group, or if you want to get in contact with us directly, shoot us an email. We are info@thecanonparadigm.com. Love you. Goodbye.